Welcome to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast, presented by 13 Fishing Canada. Make your own luck. We're here to scratch that angling itch and talk everything fishing. Join us as we sit down with special guests from across the industry. Now, here's your hosts, Brandon Cater and Logan Lewis.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back. This is episode 57 of the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast. And man, I can't believe we're at 57 episodes. But this is going to be, I'm excited to listen to this interview as you, Logan, are the only one that sat down with Mac Mulligan and talked a lot of fishing. I from what you told me, it's a lot of lake trout. And he's a guide. He's filmed with Huntfish Manitoba. You know, they've done a lot of stuff up there with, you know, Clayton Schick and all kinds of stuff. So I'm interested to even listen to the interview, as I have not tuned into it yet.
Yeah, no, this one I was flying solo, but you were busy. One thing, helped me buy a house this week. So definitely would recommend Brandon for that. He's doing things that I didn't even appreciate it. Like me and my girlfriend knew nothing about buying a house, and like, as you, if you've listened to the pod long enough, you know Brandon's been doing this for what, how long now?
About a year now.
Yeah, and that it doesn't show at all. So it was we got her done in 4 days, 5 days, whatever. Like, it was quick, and yeah. 10 out of 10, 11 out of 10 would recommend, because now we'll be moving to our house on the 18th of September. So that we'll say that's why you weren't here, eh? You're working, doing all the paperwork for us.
I was actually working my butt off for Logan on the back end of things, just making sure that you know, they were getting the best deal possible and the outcome that they wanted. And, you know, it all came together. I had to miss another episode here, but I think you and Darian are going to be pretty happy about it, though.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the best part is the buyer doesn't even have to pay you. It's the seller that's doing it. So you're doing it for me for free, basically.
I am doing it for free. So anybody looking to buy a house, I mean, use my services for free.
Yes, there you go. Selling, different story.
We'll have to talk, yeah.
Yeah.
All in all, though, this is, episode 57, man. Like, this is, we've been doing this for a while. Mm-hmm. We've had some great conversations, met a lot of great people, and this one is no slouch?
Not at all. No, Mac was awesome to talk to. Like we say, like sometimes, like when we're kind of lining up with the guests at the start, it's like they're like, "Well, how long are we looking here?" And I'm like, usually, like minimum is about 30 minutes, usually around that 45. But I always say, like, sometimes you never know. The conversation just flows so much that like sometimes ends up being an hour and a half kind of thing. So this was one of those ones that just it kept going, and we'll for sure have him on again because there's a lot more we can talk about. But definitely, for this episode, you're going to want to stay tuned. We talked a lot kind of timely things as far as late summer, midsummer, and fall lake trout. We went heavy on that, touched on pike a little bit. And this is mostly for Baker's Narrows. This is where Mac guides. So that's kind of one thing that I think would interest lots of our listeners because this is a drive-to camp as well. It's not a fly-in. So they get lots of people that are driving up. There's lots of people, say you're doing a three-day trip. They'll do the first day guided and then do it yourself the next 2 days. So this is kind of some useful information for anyone who does that. Like he says, I think he said last year they put through 5,000 people in the winter, like tons of people. So,
and is Mac the head guide?
I didn't get like a for sure confirmation of that, but I think he said he's been there is 6 or 7 years now.
And he's not that old.
No, he's not that old. And just the way he was talking about like hiring stuff like that, and kind of building that family that you kind of get at a lodge. If he's not head guide, then he'd be pretty high up there, because that's a pretty good amount of experience, right? So definitely showed. He said at the start of the episode there he's an 02 baby. So I thought he was a bit older than that, but I mean, goes to show, right, that we're starting to get into those ages now where you've got people doing a lot of the same stuff as you in their 2000s plus. So it's kind of interesting seeing that too. But yeah, touched on a lot of stuff that's timely, and gotten into some other stuff just about the enjoyment that we get from fishing and how things have kind of changed since COVID and stuff like that as far as the fishing scene. So touched on a lot of stuff. I think it was about an hour interview. So should be a good episode.
Perfect. I guess before we jump to that, we got to give a quick mention to all of our sponsors. Obviously, 13 Fishing Canada, part of Rapella Canada. Rapella just came out with their new product. I believe it's called Crush City, new line of soft baits. So that's something to go check out. I think a lot of it is directed towards bass fishing, but I mean, if you know anything about walleye fishing, you can utilize a lot of bass tackle towards walleye. So something to check out for sure. That's Crush City, it's called. And if you go to Rapella.ca, 13fishing.ca, any of those brand names that they have underneath their umbrella, you can save yourself 15% off your entire order with our code Weekend Warriors, WKND Warriors.
Yeah. So I just put through an order on there. And with that code, it was something like, I think I had like 20 items in my cart or something. And it was going to save me almost $100, which
only 20.
Was pretty sweet.
Only,
yeah, only 20. Yeah. No, I got the one thing I want to talk about is their new line of tackle trays. Got some of those to go up north this year for guiding, and I loved their trays. It was nice. They have a kind of a nice feature where they stack nicely as well, depending what you're using for, whether it's stacking it for storage or in your boat and stuff like that. They're nice for that. They've got lots of different options and very durable. And they also, one thing that's cool is they come with a, so it's like kind of like a smoky gray main color with like red latch on it.
But so they look sexy too.
They look very nice, but then they also send a sticker that goes on the latch part that kind of looks like it's just another part of the latch, but you stick it on there and you can write what the baits are for. So I know lots of people take tape, like hockey tape or whatever, and write what's on there, but they actually give you this. So it's just kind of going with that same thing they've got for so much of their stuff, just that clean look. It definitely helps with that. And it's nice if you've got them sitting in a tackle bag and you slide them in vertically, well, then you can see that sitting right there and it tells you, these are my jigs, these are my plastics, these are my spoons, whatever, stuff like that. So got some more of those coming, got some other stuff for ice fishing already. So just kind of stocking up on that stuff. So yeah, use that code, save yourself 15% off. They got a lot of good stuff and a lot of stuff is back in stock now. I know during COVID and stuff, they had lots of low inventory for some things, but she's all back there now. So I guess next up, Saskatchewan Wildlife Federation. We actually touch on Manitoba's Master Angler Program in this episode as well, and mention the Saskatchewan one too. It's obviously a bit newer and whatnot compared to the Manitoba one, but still awesome. Seeing lots of people talking about it, lots of people submitting stuff to it. So another awesome program that they put on amongst the many things that they do for the outdoors in this province. So check them out, get yourself a membership. We've mentioned before lots of the awesome things that come with that membership as well. So we want to give them a shout out for sure.
Yeah. And of course, Lucky Bastard Distillers. They've been with the boys on the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast since day one. Great products. They ship Canada wide. You can use our code Weekend Warriors on their website. Save 10% off your order. So if you like vodka, they do have other options, other liqueurs. They do small batch releases of their whiskeys, which are unbelievable. Big whiskey guy, and I always grab one when they release it. So go check them out, luckybastard.ca. Here's a quick word from them, and then we will jump right into the interview with Mac Milligan.
There are certain moments in life that really stick with you. This is definitely one of them. The thrill of the dill, my friends, is not a myth. Prohibition is over, Saskatchewan. Ask about LB's legendary Birmingham's Dill Pickle Vodka. After all, it's not a party until someone pulls out the pickle. Tours and tastings available. Call or stop by 814 47th Street East. And tonight, why not mix your Caesar with some Lucky Bastard? It's the one with the pickle in it.
We're back here again with another interview. Got a Manitoba boy here, I'm guessing. We'll get into that. I'm not actually sure where you're from. I know you're in Manitoba right now, but I guess we have Mac Mulligan on here. And just to start things off, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
All right. Well, thanks for having me. I'm Mac Mulligan. I'm originally from Brandon, Manitoba, southern Manitoba, but I've been working up at Baker's Narrows Lodge for the last 5 years, both summer and winter. And it's kind of how I got on this thing, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. So do you kind of stay up there full time? Like, do you really head home much, or is that home now for you?
Pretty much. Like, I mean, the unique thing about Bakers here is, like, we have the winter season, and the winter season's, like, absolutely crazy compared to our summer season now, too. Like, 5 years ago, if you told the owners, like, they're, like, your winter year is going to be crazy compared to your summer year, no one would ever believe you, you know? But now that it's just absolutely changed, it's flabbergasting how much people we put through in the winter, so I don't really get much time to go home. I go home for, like 3 weeks in the fall, like when the ice is freezing. And then even then, the whole time I'm down there, I'm just kind of organizing stuff for the other guides for the winter, like equipment and stuff like that, kind of doing some calls to the sponsors and stuff like that, trying to get everything set up. So there's not a lot of off time anymore.
No, I guess that's a good problem to have too, right? Like, 'cause I know.
Yeah. Can't complain about being busy. That's for sure.
No, exactly. And like you said, the winter season usually isn't a busy season for a fishing lodge, right? For the most part.
No, it's crazy. Yeah. Like, last year, I think our numbers were higher in the winter than the summer, even. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, which, I mean, makes sense. Like, if you follow any of your guys' stuff on Instagram, whatnot, or Facebook, and just being part of the community around even Ontario, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan, even Alberta, you see a lot. It seems like a lot more people are heading there, at least that I follow and people I know are heading there in the winter, right? And it's, I don't know what the deal is with that.
Definitely destination.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think a big factor of that, too, is just, like, some of the people like Clayton Schick and Jay coming up here and putting out some videos and stuff like that definitely gets the kind of the word out there. But like the amount of people, like, I think COVID was so beneficial for us in the sense that a lot of our clients are like new anglers in the sense that they enjoyed fishing before, but COVID with like time off work and stuff, it really gave them the chance to get out there and do more of that ice fishing. And I think that we got a lot of clients that are kind of like, I call them COVID anglers, 'cause they got into it during COVID and they're good anglers. Like, they, like, all they want to do is just learn. Like, I call them like sponges, 'cause they just ask so many questions. All they want to do is learn. And you'll notice if you meet a lot of these kind of anglers, like new in the last like 3 to 5 years, I'd say, is that they're leaps and bounds ahead of anyone that's been doing it for like 15 years, because all they're doing is learning and watching videos and taking in as much information as they can. So like they're learning and they're understanding why and how everything works. Whereas opposed to the people that are just stuck in their ways. Right. So it's really, really cool to see. And I really like the winter clientele we got to work with up here.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's one thing that's different too, is like, for people who don't know, this is a place you can drive to as well. Right. So yeah, I think that's like huge.
Pavement right up here. It's crazy. Yeah.
And it's actually, depending what way you take, there's some good road, right? Heading in there compared to lots of the lodges, right?
Yeah, I mean, coming up, if you come up from the number 10 way, like, it's blacktop the whole way, like, right up to the lodge. Like, literally, like, you can throw a rock from the lodge and hit the highway.
Yeah, and so that's ideal, and that leads to more people coming. And I think the other thing that's kind of cool is I've seen how you guys offer, like, say it's someone's a three-day trip, you'll offer, like, a one-day guided trip, right?
Yes, exactly.
And then they can go and do their own thing, because you probably do have lots of people that kind of, okay, I want to figure out how to fish this lake a bit, because every lake can be different. You guys can kind of show them the ropes, and then they're good to do their own thing. Lots of people like that DIY kind of part of it too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like that's a big huge thing about Bakers too, is like we have the capabilities to offer the fully all-inclusive stuff from, like, I mean, in the summer, for example, we do the flyouts, we do quad tours, we do all that stuff. So like we do like the full American plan package, but we can also do like the DIY, like where you come up and do it yourself, or like kind of half do the American plan kind of deal, which is great too. It's just kind of like, I tell all the clients, it's like you get out of it whatever you put into it. You know, like if you want to really capitalize on your time up here, you're driving a long way up from the southern states or whatever, you want to really focus on doing well, then it's worth investing a little bit into a guide and kind of getting your odds up, you know. But if it's not a far drive for you, come up and do it yourself, whatever, that's fine too.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll come back to the Bakers Narrows a bit, but as far as yourself, like, where, how did you get started in fishing? Like, is this from like a very young age? Like, I know some people we've talked to and whatnot at some of the shows and stuff we've been to, it's like, I actually just started like 3 or 4 years ago, but there are just like their learning curve and everything else is just straight up,
and
right?
That's what I was talking about, right? Like the newer generation of anglers, like it's crazy.
Yeah.
But for myself, like I'd say, like, I don't know, like I kind of started out young. Like my family didn't fish a lot, like very little into the outdoors. Like my grandparents, both sides of my grandparents fished a bit, but more so just for food than anything. Like just your classic, like once in a while, go get a couple of walleye for dinner kind of deal. And I mean, that kind of got my foot in the door for sure. And I had a few friends growing up that were kind of into fishing too. So we spent a lot of time in the river and stuff like that, getting our parents to drive us out and drop us off kind of deal. But like, other than that, like I've always been like a kid just fascinated by the water. Like I've always loved like playing in the swamps with the minnows and the frogs and the salamanders, like all that kind of stuff, just really fascinated with what's underneath the water and how that stuff lives under there, you know? And I think right. that really just fuels the passion for like the fishing aspect of it, is just knowing what's under there and learning about it and figuring it out. There's just so much to learn about. It's a whole different universe, right?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. And I think the big thing for lots of people, myself included, is you never know what the next bite's going to be, right? You well, don't exactly. always that's know the it. Species. It's you don't know unknown. The size, all that.
So cool. It's and I think that's like what like I related to as a kid is like I mean I'd dip my little like butterfly net in the creeks and the sloughs, right, and pull out mm-hmm. whatever. You never know what you're gonna get in there, right? Like different yeah. kinds of minnows, different kinds of chub, whatever. It's just it's the cool part of the unknown. No matter how sophisticated you make it, there's still unknown certainties,
right? And you said you've been up there for a handful of years now, so were you anywhere yeah. else before that, or is this just kind of I think honestly, are you 99?
This is the first place I started guiding. Like I'm a 2002 kid, so I'm pretty young.
Oh wow.
I came up here in the summer of grade 11, and I just like me and a buddy came up here trying it out, and I fell in love with it, you know? Like I just love it, I love doing it. And I realize it's not something like you're never going to find a job where you love it every single day. But if you can do like 30 days straight, 20 days straight and feel like you only worked a week, you're mm-hmm. not doing bad, you know? So that's the way I look at it. It's not the industry to make millions, but it's the quality of life. I love it. You know, I mean, like you're out here on the lake. It's awesome, right? Like you can't complain about it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I like it. But like, yeah, like I started in the summer of grade 11 and then we went back, finished grade 12. We actually stacked our classes in the first half of the year. So we finished early. And then both of us came up and started guiding that winter. And then he ended up going a different path into fire college. And I ended up sticking it out. And I've been doing it ever since, full time year round.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it. Right. Like, I don't think I just did my second stint of guiding this spring. And it's people don't realize, mm-hmm. I think, that there's really is not many days off, if any. Right. Like, it's kind of you do a stint and then there's a break. Yeah. So.
Like I said, if you can enjoy a handful of them, it's great.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like lots of people do, yeah, they get weekends off, but they'll do a whole year and not enjoy their job, right? So I think that's definitely a good way to look at it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But I guess getting back to the Baker's Narrows, like I don't know. I haven't been up there myself. I've driven by mm-hmm. it. We'll go up to Flin Flon a bit, been to Clearwater stuff. So I've been around yeah. the area, but kind of what's the deal with Baker's Narrows? Like is this pre-existing, like been here for a long time? Is it the only lodge on the lake? Like what's the deal?
Baker's is like it's been around, it's been established since like I think it doesn't say on this hat, but on the other hats it says I think it's like 1963 or something like that. I'm not 100% sure, don't quote me on that, but it's been around quite a while. But in the last like I'd say 10 years it's really kind of established itself like in like kind of the state of like becoming like one of the super busy lodges.
Yeah.
Like I see it being like one of the busier lodges in Canada just from like our summer clients that we put through and our winter clients. Like last winter, like we put through well over 5,000 clients just in the winter.
Wow.
So there's a lot of people coming up and going through. So it's a lot of feet through the door, you know, meet a lot of people, see a lot of things, shake a lot of hands. For sure.
Yeah, get to take a bunch of guys out. I think that's the fun part, is meeting all those people, right? And I think that's obviously, if you said it's been around for that long, that's tons and tons of people that are going through there. And you guys also do a really good job showing off on social media and stuff like that too. Yeah. So I think that helps, right?
We have a guy that does a really good job on the marketing side of things. And the biggest thing too, like with anything, in my opinion, in any business, is like reinvesting it. You got to reinvest in your equipment, keep stuff up to date. You don't want to just let stuff fall through the cracks. You know, you got to keep it up. Like all the cabins we have here are original cabins that were originally built with the lodge, like back in the, I want to say it was like mid 60s or whatever, mm-hmm. but they're all like the same cabins. They're just like refurbished, you know, like we do the log chinking, we do all that stuff, new floors and all that stuff. We just tinned a bunch of the roofs. So it's awesome. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's vintage, but it's homey in the sense that it's all good. It's all up to date, you know?
Right. And is that the same deal with the boats there? Like, are those, is that, like, I see your boat there. Is that yours or is that lodge?
Yeah. So me and a couple of other guides have our own boats that we guide out of.
Nice.
And we all like reinvest in our equipment pretty heavily. And yeah, I mean, you can ask the guy, like any guide, like guides don't like using not up to par stuff. So we don't
really
have tolerance for subpar stuff.
Yeah. And that's
every
that's
day you want to have stuff that's good.
Yeah. And we seem to have buying problems with whatever it is. So it's kind of easy to keep reinvesting. Right. But
exactly. No,
that's the nice thing is when you can, like, I guess you're also then responsible for all your own stuff, which is kind of nice. Right. Cause then this is me. This is my job and it includes all that.
You're in charge of this and no one else is.
Yeah, exactly. So no, that's, I've seen your boat there and some of your videos and stuff. I'm like, those are nice lodge boats, but it makes more sense if that's actually your boat. So
their own investments.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess you guys are mostly lake trout and pike up there, right?
Yeah, we do a lot of lake trout and pike. We do walleye as well, but this isn't really like a crazy numbers walleye lake. We have trophies in here, but it's not like a kind of crazy numbers lake. You know, like we have flyouts and quad tours for that stuff.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And that's, I mean, when you can, it's fun obviously catching those big fish, whether they're the pike or the lakers, but it's also nice, I bet, to do those trips into the bush and just have a numbers day on walleye. Hey?
Go in there and just smash the heck out of numbers. It's fun. Can't complain. Yeah,
for sure. So I guess as far as the lake trout and pike, like obviously you guys have some huge lakers, but for people that don't know, like what are we looking at for size here? Like I guess like an inch pound kind of thing. I know lots of people can relate to pounds more, but obviously lots of us go off inches. So what are we kind of looking at there?
Yeah, well, like, I mean, we don't weigh much fish at all here.
Right.
But I'd say like, I mean, like lake trout obviously do get big. Like in the winter, we put a lot of trophies up on the ice. Throughout this winter season, we put up 125 trophies over 35 inches.
Nice.
It's not necessarily something that happens every day, but in the winter, it's a lot more common, I think, just because we got so many people out there, got a lot more lines in the water, we're spread out more. And the big thing with lake trout is that, like, you just got to put in time. It's a numbers game. You just got to put in time, especially for those big hogs. And the way I look at it is in the winter, you're putting in, like, you're going out from daybreak to dusk, right? So you're out there for 100% of the bite window. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the summer, your sun's coming up at like 5 a.m., even 4:30 a.m. And then your sun's setting at like 12, like in like at night, midnight usually. So it's like, man, you're going out there for like, if you're lucky, maybe 60 to 80% of the time, you know, like, and that's still like 15 hours. Like most people aren't doing that. And in the summer, like I'd say like 90% of the clients don't want to sit and fish for lake trout all day. They want to fish for lake trout and then they want to go for pike or walleye, you know? So it's the distractions that kind of get in the way a little bit in the summer, in my opinion. Whereas in the winter, it's like you go sit in a tent with the expectation, if I get 5 bites today, that's going to be a good day. Whereas in the summer, it's like, it's hard to just get 5 bites and be satisfied because you're so, you're so stimulated, right? Like you're looking around at the lake, you see all the birds and the weeds and other boats moving around. It's hard to just focus on one thing. And I think that's the biggest struggle. But yeah, like the lake trout get big here. Like we get some big ones, but like the biggest thing with lake trout, like I've talked about in some of the videos I made too, is expectations. Like you don't ever go out expecting to catch big lake trout. Go out just hoping, like keep your hopes high and your expectations low. Like expect to have to work for everything and hope that it happens, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't ever go into it expecting, because it's never going to be good. It's just always hope high and expect low. That's the best way I could like say anything for lake trout.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's true. And the hardest part I find when you do guide these big fish, and we talked about having some newer people, they don't realize how special that big fish can be sometimes. And it's like you just put someone on a bigger lake trout than you've ever caught, and they're like, oh yeah, it's a good fish. And you're like, man, if I caught that fish with one of my buddies, I'd be losing it right now. It's just like, it's kind of funny, right?
And that's like the thing too, like I mentioned earlier, but like people seeing the videos and stuff, like it's great, but people start to get that kind of expectation. Like that's like something I'm really focusing on trying to convey. And like my little bit of YouTube I've been trying to do is like expectations for lake trout and like just the reality of it. Like, it's not like it's going to be crash and bang all day long, every day. It's like, you're going to have a lot of dry spells. Like, and like, I've tried to kind of push Clayton towards that too. Me and Clayton chat a lot, but just say we gotta tell people like how it actually is. Like, it's not going to be crazy every day, you know. But he was already kind of doing that before. But like whenever I get a bit of airtime with him, like I always just try to just put a little bit of emphasis on that point too, you know. Like the highs are high and the lows are like ultra low.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's all about the perspective, right? Like it's what. Exactly. So there's a video idea, just a 15-hour no cut video of a lake trout day.
Yeah. 2 hours of us just like in the boat, just scratching our heads.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Why are we doing this?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the tough part, right? Because it's when you are watching the YouTube, those videos are being uploaded for entertainment, and so it's exactly. those big fish, it's the numbers, whatever, and mm-hmm. it's like, maybe if you do get that, like a good way to be is like, this is my fifth day out here, and you've seen this all compressed into 15 minutes, and it's like, these are the highlights of 5 days. Now, I've been fishing 12 hours every day or something, right? Like, that would kind of exactly. put it into perspective, so. No, yeah. that's a good point. Yeah, I think that is something that's quite true. Is like you said, 5,000 people went through last winter, whatever, and as yeah. far as the number of trophies, like that goes to show how special those fish really are.
Exactly, and I mean, yeah, fish get lost and missed and whatever, but to put that many big fish on the ice is like that's spectacular. Like, that's leaps and bounds beyond like what the lodge has done in the past. And I think a big factor of that is just like having a bit of a bigger team of guides, having obviously more clients coming through. And a big part of that, I think, is like the mapping we've done, like having more in your pocket, like having more of the lake covered that you can set people on as opposed to just select few areas. So now, like, we're basically covering the whole lake, spreading all the pressure out, letting everything rest and refurbish and hitting those spots again once they kind of recuperate, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's what we try and do up there, too. We've got a board and everyone, all 9 guides, right where they're going. And that way you can let a spot rest, especially for the pike, because that's what the Americans love is the pike, right? So rest those spots and come back a couple of days later. I think that's a big thing. And so there's no, like, I know Manitoba specifically has a company that does mapping of some places. Is your guys' lakes not done or anything?
The big part of the lakes are not, which, I mean, I'm not complaining about by any means, but the little parts are getting done, which is fine. Like, I mean, that's good. Like eventually, I mean, on any public water, it will eventually get mapped out. So I'm kind of expecting it, but I'm not complaining. That's not done yet.
Yeah, exactly. Keep some of your spots secret to yourself. And that's one thing.
Yeah, but like, even at the end of the day too, it's like, even with the like small parts of the lake being mapped out, it's like, even with it being mapped out, like people see how much structure there is and like, to an extent, it's kind of overwhelming because there's so much. It's like, where do you start? Mm-hmm. And obviously, like even if you're up here for like 3 days and you have the mapping, it's like you can hit 30 spots and blank out on all of them before you find a spot that's going to be productive.
Yeah,
and exactly. and 5 or 10 of those 30 spots that you tried would have been productive last week. You know, like stuff changes fast in the fishing world. So the bit, like, I mean, even with stuff being mapped out, still, I think local knowledge and I think guides are just going to be like still the big dog, you know?
Yeah. And that's, I think one thing people should realize too, is we're talking about a lake that could have anyone from the public come up to it as well. Right. Like, it's not like where I am in the territories where it's just the guests and the locals fishing it. Right. Like that changes pressure quite a bit as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely got different factors for sure.
Yeah. So I guess getting into that, we're recording this July 31st. So I don't know if you'd call this midsummer or what you'd call this, but I think you'd be a pretty good guy. Yeah, midsummer. I think you'd be a pretty good guy to get in depth about. We'll touch on pike too, but I don't know if this is just my bias. Much more interested in lake trout. So we'll talk about some targeting midsummer lake trout and midsummer and fall lake trout. And then after that, we'll get into some of the pike. But I guess starting from the basics, I guess, and then getting a bit more in depth, what are you doing midsummer and into the fall for Lakers?
So like right now, those fish, I mean, you can still get some of them shallow, but for the most part, as the kind of year progresses, like you're going to see a lot more of the kind of numbers kind of congregate in a little bit deeper water, like off of some deeper drop-offs, like looking more so at that like 100 to like 140 as opposed to like 60 to 80 kind of deal. You'll still find fish in like 60 to 80 year round pretty much, but you're going to find more of those fish kind of push off a little bit deeper. But the biggest thing is, I mean, like, I'm a firm believer in if you find bait, you're going to find fish. You just got to find bait that's getting smashed by fish, you know? So, like, I'm always looking for bait getting smashed by lake trout. Mm-hmm. I'll drive around for half an hour looking for bait fish getting smashed, and I'll focus on that. But as the year progresses, like, you're definitely going to want to look a little bit deeper. Same as walleyes in the fall. Like, they push a little bit deeper, right? You're going to need to look a little bit deeper. And as in that deep water, trolling can be good, but ultimately it's a lot more effective in my opinion to be jigging in that deeper water,
right?
Especially like when fishing the bottom. Like if you're fishing 100 feet, 120 feet, you're gonna kind of want to jig in my opinion more so than not. You don't cover as much water, but you can still get some scent down there, lay a dead bait down there in the deeper water. Even, you know, like there's options. The only thing is, like, I'll troll in the deeper water, but I'm mainly trolling like the thermocline, wherever that thermocline is, whether it's at 40 or 60, I'll troll that thermocline a lot, and you get a lot of fish pulling off the thermocline throughout the kind of midsummer. After that, like after, I mean, the lake trout spawn in the fall, obviously, but after like they kind of, they congregate in the holes, like in the little bit deeper edges and stuff, but like that 2 weeks, I'd say even like week and a half, just before they go up to like the reefs to start spawning, it can either be like somewhat effective or it can just be like absolute trash, like super tough to get them to bite. I like in my experience, I've got like, I've had a couple years where in that like middle to kind of late September, it's just been like so hard to catch anything, like anything lake trout related. It's just like impossible. The only ones you catch are like ones that just like are super skinny and like don't even look like they could spawn. Like they just don't even look like they carry the genetic, even though like you can see all the other ones that are like edging up towards structure to spawn and stuff. It's just like, I've had very, very hard time getting them to bite.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And I guess with doing that, when you talked about jigging, you're just basically sharpshooting these fish, right?
Basically, yeah. Like, I mean, like it's not quite the same as like what you do for walleye, like sharpshooting a specific fish, just because in the deep water, like those fish move so much, and like lake trout are not like walleye. Like lake trout literally just swim all day long, every day.
Mm-hmm.
So like they're not just sitting, floating still. Like they're always moving. So you kind of want to sharpshoot them, but more so like fish structure to an extent, because those fish are like, they're like, the way I look at it is like, they're like ants on a sidewalk. They're crawling all over the place all the time. And it's just a matter of being in the right place at the right time, especially for the big ones. Yeah. And it's going to be harder for you to close your eyes and poke your finger down on a sidewalk and kill an ant than it is to, or not, I shouldn't say kill an ant, for an ant, like for you to hit an ant, than for you to just hold your finger there and the ants come to you. It's just right. Like, they're going to come to you. It's just a matter of time, you know? And you can't be everywhere at once, so you're better off just putting in like a like time at kind of points of interest, you know?
Right. Yeah. Spots that you know are kind of, like exactly. You said, points
spots,
of interest.
And spots that you know fish are going to frequent.
Yeah.
Whether it's all the time or whether you just know big fish are going to come through here, you just got to invest, you know?
Yeah. And so with that, I'm guessing you're tipping your jigs with some kind of like sucker belly, something like that.
I like a little bit of scent. Like for stuff that you're like not moving that much, yeah. Like if you're fishing a tube or something like that, super slow on the bottom, you're definitely going to want bait. Like the faster I move baits, the less I use bait. You know, like if I'm ripping tubes or if I'm ripping like lead spoons, even like flutter spoons, whatever, if I'm ripping stuff like aggressively through the water, like I don't tip my stuff just because it's moving so fast. It's, they don't got time to like taste it or even think about it. You know, like they're coming up to just kill it. But if I'm fishing something slow on the bottom, I'm definitely looking at tipping stuff for sure.
We had a little technical difficulties there, but we're back now. I think when we cut out, we were talking about jigging lake trout or sharpshooting them, kind of.
Yeah, I think we're talking about kind of like the midsummer lake trout, targeting them in like the deeper water kind of deal. And we're talking about focusing on structure as opposed to like specifically sharpshooting. Like I like to focus on structure, especially for bigger fish.
Yeah.
Fish something that you know the big fish are going to come around to, not something that you're just marking a fish, so you're just going to invest in where that fish is. Like I like to focus on actual structure, just like you would in the winter, like focus on structure and kind of focus on what those fish are going to do. I don't know if that, like, do you know if that analogy I did about the ants and stuff kind of stuck or no?
Yeah, no, okay. I think that makes sense, right? Because like you said, even if you want to say like you put a little bit of honey on the sidewalk and then the ants are going to come to that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, like I mean, getting a bit of scent down there is definitely going to get them in. Whether that's a little bit of chumming, like light chumming, don't chum like a crazy man, but chum a little bit. And like tipping your baits too. Like I think we kind of touched on that as we got cut out there, but like I definitely tip my baits for sure. Like I don't tip my spoons, rattle baits, kind of anything like that I'm ripping really fast, but I'll tip my tubes if I'm fishing them slow on the bottom. But if I'm ripping tubes, I don't really care about bait that much. It's a quick reaction bite. It's not something that you're kind of sticking in their face. It's something that you're ripping past their face. So they're going to kind of zoom after it and attack it, you know?
Right.
Like basically the way to think about it is like, you're not tipping a lot of the baits you troll with. So why are you going to tip some of the baits you're literally vertically trolling, right? You're just not. You're just ripping it so fast, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was one thing though you did mention as well as dropping dead baits. And I think I'm doing a fly in at the end of this or at the end of August. So we're going to try some Ciscos and stuff. How are you rigging that up there? Like you said, if you're fishing deep, how are you kind of rigging up those dead baits and getting those down?
So, I mean, some guys like to use weights and stuff. Like I like to just keep it weightless. Like I think that, I mean, it's kind of tough sometimes, especially with like the deep water, you have some currents and stuff, but if you can get your dead bait down there without weight, and just have it sit down their wait list, I think that that's a better option, because those fish, like I think those lakes are just so finicky in the sense that and you got to think everything I'm talking about is just stuff I'm talking about on Athapap, right? Like I have no trout experience anywhere else. This is just like what I've learned and kind of experienced here. And like, if those trout feel weight, kind of feel resistance when they're picking something up, like they drop it. Like they don't like it. They don't like, they want it to be natural. If they pick up a dead fish off the bottom, there's no restricting. There's no resistance. They just pick it up and swim, you know?
Right.
So what I usually run is like, I run a bait feeder reel. So like I have the clicker going, basically similar to catfish. Right. But I try to keep it all weightless. Like if it's real windy and I'm trying to get my clients to jig and I'm having issues with getting tangled once in a while, I'll run a weight and try to cast it a little bit. But other than that, like I try to keep it weightless and just let it just float down on its own.
Right. And if you do have a weight, that'd be like a line through or something like that. So
at least it's like basically like a slip weight, you know?
Yeah.
But still like stuff, like as that thing falls, you got to think it's falling so far. So that weight wants to slide away from that bait and you want to keep that weight right at that bait. Like I usually run like a 3 foot lead to a swivel and then a weight, but that weight still wants to slide away because that bait falls so much slower. Right. So you want to try to keep everything together. So it's kind of tough. But if you got to do it, you got to do it, you know?
Yeah. And that seems to be, at least from where I'm going, I've heard that that's like, yeah, you can jig fish, you can troll fish, but the big ones are usually like, that's, you're singling those out because we're using whatever 16, 18 inch Ciscos, right? So some bigger baits there.
Like if you're out there and like, you don't care about catching small fish, if you're focusing on a big bite, that's the way to do it, is like you can jig a big tube too, but at the end of the day, like I say, in a lot of things I've talked to people about with lake trout, is like big fish will eat small active baits too, but you can't go wrong with a big dead bait on the bottom. Like lake trout are the biggest scavengers in the lake, man. Like those things, literally all they do is look around for food. Like they're cross-eyed all day long looking for food.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the other thing too. And I found when you're jigging some of those bigger baits or trolling the bigger ones, the little ones still manage to find their way onto there. It doesn't matter what it is, right?
And like, honestly, like in my experience, it's like the biggest thing for me is like my clients just like, at the end of the day, it's like, it doesn't matter how many people say it or how passionate people are. We just want a big fish. We just want a big fish. Like at the end of the day, people want to catch fish. Like people are going to complain about not catching fish while going for a big fish, but they're never going to complain about catching fish while going for a big fish, you know? Mm-hmm. So if people are getting fish in the boat, getting drag pulled out of the reels, they don't really care. Yeah, they want a big fish, but like that's what we were talking about earlier, that like the uncertainty, you never know what one's going to be the big fish, you know? It's going to come. It's just a matter of putting in the time and waiting it out.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you can kind of, it's almost like giving them a little piece of candy in between, right? When you can get the littler ones.
And like a big fish will eat small stuff, obviously, too. Like, I mean, you got to look at walleyes and stuff, too. Like, what do people do when the bite's tough? Literally everyone downsizes, right? It's the same with lake. But when the bite's tough, you downsize. It's the name of the game, downsizing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's
the same with pike, too. You can downsize and go faster.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly. And I guess when we kind of talked about that midsummer, what I know everywhere is different as far as where you are, how far north you are. What are you, for that line that you guys are on, where are you finding spawn is typically happening? Like what time of year?
Well, I do a bit of talking with like the biologists from the Paw, Manitoba, which is like an hour south here. And they say that historically the best, like the most active spawning days for like their spawn camp, they run a spawn camp on Clearwater, and the most active days are like the last few days in September. But as like in the last like 10 years or so, they've noticed that it's kind of moved up a couple days. And that's just kind of like just a little bit of global change, stuff like that. But it's definitely a factor. But they say like that's like kind of the most, like the biggest peak in activity for the spawning. And a lot of that is like the kind of middle class fish, like that kind of 10, 12 pound range, not necessarily like the big heifers, but a lot of like the middle range ones. I think the big ones go a little bit later, honestly. I think they kind of go up a little bit later and do their business, but I don't know. I don't know for sure.
Yeah. Well, the younger ones are just more eager, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And I guess as far as the other species here with pike, what's the deal there? Like when I'm guiding up in the territories, everything's basically still in the bays. So I kind of have it easier that time of year compared to later on, right?
Like that for sure. Up here, like, so the way like Lake Athapap is kind of divvied up is like we have the north end, which is kind of segregated by the two bridges. And then we got the big south basin, like the huge part where we fish for lake trout a lot. And out there, we do a bit of pike fishing, but we don't get a lot of vegetation out there. So it makes it tough for pike fishing. Like, I think a lot of pike out there honestly chase Ciscos. Like, you catch the odd one out there going for trout in, like, the middle of the lake. just see a mark reel up to it and catch like a 40-inch pike, 42-inch pike. It's like so random, but they're just out there cruising, you know, like all they do is eat Ciscos too. So out there, it's tough because like there's a few decent spots, but if one spot's not good, like you got to do a long run to go to another spot that's decent. And then if that spot's not good, it's a long run to another spot. Whereas on the, like on the smaller parts of the lake, we have a lot more vegetation, a lot more weed growth, a lot more shallower water access. So like we can catch a lot of fish at a lot of spots in close vicinity. So you can get a really good milk run going. But yeah, like as the year progresses with pike too, there's like this time, like usually kind of like end of August where it just gets so tough too for a little bit. And like, I love pike fishing and stuff, but man, like pike can like make it so hard on the guiding side of things too sometimes, because for example, like my clients today, like I was like, do you guys want to go for pike after trout fishing? It's kind of tough for trout fishing, but whatever, you know? And they're like, yeah, let's go for pike because pike are dumb. They bite anything, you know? And that's the assumption people have. Like, you know, up there too, it's like everyone thinks like, oh, pike are dumb. They eat anything, but that's not the case. So like it puts a lot of pressure on the guides for some reason, because it's like, everyone thinks it's going to be crazy pike fishing, but it's not going to be crazy pike fishing all the time. Like fish are fish, you know, if they're not in a super aggressive mood, it's going to be hard to get them to bite. So when it's like that, honestly, like the best way I find to get big pike is just go fish for walleye, you know, catch the odd big pike out there doing that. Yeah, you're not going to catch a lot deeper. Of numbers of pike, but you're going to catch some big pike out there that are chasing Ciscos and chasing walleyes in the deeper water.
Yeah.
Once, like if they're shallow and inactive, it's like, man, good luck.
Yeah, exactly. And that is like, I mean, I'm sure that's probably the rule, like 85% of the time, if you put something in a pike's face, lots, like, because there's so many of them too, people think, oh, they'll eat whatever, but that's because there's so many numbers too. So
it's hard. Like it's hard to kind of, and that's like a different expectation too. It's kind of the polar opposite really is, it's like, because pike kind of should be good all the time, but they're not, right?
Yeah, they think that until they have to throw a black fly in their face for 10 minutes and the pike doesn't even look at it. And then they're like, okay, maybe they won't eat anything. Like,
exactly.
There's some fish you don't even know, maybe it was caught yesterday or something like that, right? Like you don't know necessarily, right?
Yeah, and then, I mean, you get some stupid, dumb fish that you can catch like three times in a day. You know, it's like dumb.
Exactly.
Fish are so weird, man. Like you spend your whole life getting outsmarted by fish with like a brain the size of half a peanut, you know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. You spend all the time, all the money to try and figure that out. You buy the Lyscope, you buy your helixes, whatever and stuff. And it's like, man, all this just to try and outsmart a fish.
Yeah. It's just nuts. Absolutely. Yeah. Bonkers.
Yeah. But I guess the one thing that I wanted to comment on there too, when you're talking about the pike out deeper crushing Cisco, like we're typically targeting them in shallow there in the spring, but it is interesting, like when you're catching pike that are coming up with a burbot in their mouth or something, it's like, okay, these pike are obviously deep, but then as soon as you start exploring that, like say 15 feet and below, well, you just open up a whole new can of worms as to where these fish could be, right?
Oh, that's just it. Like, and man, like it's crazy, like those pike especially, like they go freaking anywhere, man. Like I've done a bit of exploring here, like on the small, like just doing some mapping and like downrigging and stuff, and man, like I've caught a lot of like nice pike, like in like unethical depths while going for trout, like in like 70, 80 feet of water, like on bottom, like going for trout. And like, that just kind of shows you too. It's like, they're literally anywhere, but yet like, I don't know. I find like in the deeper water, the fish that are down there, like they're just way bigger. Like your average size is like 38, 39 inches, you know, like your average size is just really big. But yeah, it's, I mean, obviously you don't really want to target them in the deep water, but you can definitely catch them suspended too. Like I've done pretty good pulling like deeper diving cranks out and just over basin water, you know, where the Cisco schools are sitting. It's weird.
Exactly. And I like that you said unethical depths, because it's not like you're purposely targeting pike that you can't, when you're trolling that area and you're trolling a bunch of bait or whatever. Like the place I'm going back to, I haven't been there since 2017, I think, but we caught two pike over 40 inches in 80 feet of water that were over 120 feet. But they're up there where all the bait was, and we're just trolling that. You can't help that, right? So it's tough with that.
Honestly, like I don't know, like we said, unethical. Like I don't target them in the deep water, but all the fish I have caught in the deep water, like I haven't had any issues, like any issues releasing them, thankfully. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, like I definitely don't recommend targeting them in the deep water. I try not to go deeper than 30.
Yeah, exactly. And that's our rule of thumb here too on the pod, is we talk about that quite a bit. And it is, like you said, it is interesting though, because those pike that we caught, there was no visual signs of any barotrauma, nothing like that, when we did catch them out deeper like that. Like they all looked very healthy. like things like the eye or just the kind of the redness that they'll get sometimes. There was none of that. It was all, yeah. Everything looked good. So I agree with you on that one there, but yeah, that's not an excuse to target them that deep, no, I guess.
Yeah, it's weird.
For sure. So I guess you kind of mentioned, I guess if you're jigging or trolling or whatever, but as far as if you were to take your whole season, your whole summer season, fall season into one thing, what are you kind of, are you more like, I would think trolling in the spring and then jigging throughout the midsummer and fall? Is that kind of the program?
Like I prefer jigging for sure. If the bite gets tough jigging, that's when I start trolling.
Okay.
Like I'm a, like I like trolling too, but my confidence for a big bite is putting in time at a high percentage area. I'm right. More confident in that than getting a big bite trolling. Like I've have caught some big ones trolling too, but like I've just seen it so many times, like where you put in time and then you pull the plug and then you see like footage later of underwater cam or something and big fish were like literally coming in as you're leaving. It's like, right. Oh man, why didn't we just trust your gut? Like the way I think about it is like your first pick is like, you just got to trust your gut. Your first pick is your best pick, you know, just stick with it, grind it out. Like yeah. I found my best success guiding is like as guiding, like you get out there every day and like you want to try different things and stuff all the time. And obviously like you do, but you get in your head in the sense like, I want to go here. 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 Whereas it's like you can't make decisions. Sometimes you get overwhelmed. So it's like just pick the first thing that comes to your head, just pick it and just stick with it. Just trust yourself, you know? And yeah. I found a lot of good success doing that, especially this last winter. Like I found great success just sticking to like what my first get, like what my first pick was. But for like the trolling side of things, like I got, like I said, like I really don't troll a crazy amount. I have a downrigger on my boat. And I run like three-way rigs too. But I, like I said, I mainly do that when I'm having a tough time, like with a jig bite, like if it's flat calm or something like that, I'll usually do some trolling.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that's a good thing to mention too, is that you're not like, it's not just your head that you're in, because you've also got whatever it is, 2-3 people in the boat that are also like, if the bite's slower, they're kind of questioning things too. And it's hard yeah. to stay on course when you've got them being like, well, this doesn't seem to be working, or, oh, the fishing slow right now. Yeah, it's exactly. like,
yeah, yeah, and that's a big thing of guiding too. I mean, as you know, it's like you got to just, yeah, you know, it's whatever. You just got to keep plugging away.
Yeah, and some of the comments I had this year caught the morning, the second day was the 42.5. This is lake trout, 42.5, 39, 39, 38, 38, 37. And we were driving out the next morning. They're like, yeah, yesterday was a good warm up, but hopefully we catch some big fish today. And I was yeah. like, that's tough. Yeah, that's exactly. tough when they say that. Well, yeah, because like those are all
idiots.
Yeah, all good fish, right? And it's like most people would be jacked to catch those, but that kind of plays into also maybe not understanding as well that those yeah, are.
And that's like a big thing too. Like, I mean, like the best way to avoid that, in my opinion, is just like telling your clients like the night before. Like what I always, not always do, but like what I tell the other guides too is like, if anything, if people ask for the fishing, is if anything, you say slow, because then if you do well, you're like they're beyond the moon, right? Because like
they're
God. like they defied the odds in the sense that like it's not for the guide, it's for the clients. So like they're happier with their trip as opposed to being like, oh, the fishing was great today, and then you go out the next day and do crappy. It's like mm-hmm. man, if you tell them like that's been okay, you know, you got to work for your bites, whatever. Even it's even been a little bit slower at times, you know, because then it's like if you go out and get a couple nice fish, get some good numbers, like their expectations are low, right? So then you're beating yeah. their expectations and then they're pumped.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit of the mental games in the sense of that too.
Yeah. You know? Managing expectations is yeah, part of the job big, there for sure.
Big one for sure. And it takes yeah. the pressure off the guide in a big sense too.
Yeah. And I mean, everyone, you're working together as far as all the other mm-hmm. guides, right? Like it's for the better of the lodge. You obviously want to catch fish. And if someone's constantly saying like, oh, it's always good, it's always good, stuff like that, it's like, okay, you're not managing expectations too well.
Yeah, I hate people like that.
Cat's dead.
So much.
Yeah. So I guess kind of talked about the lake trout and the pike there and kind of getting into some of the other stuff that you're doing. I was going to ask you, what's the deal with the Timber Wilderness products? I've seen some of those in Cabela's, I think, and stuff like that.
Yeah, so Timber Wilderness products is like kind of a newer company out of Selkirk.
Oh, nice.
Like more like Lockport, I guess, is kind of where it originated from. But Yeah, I've been working with them a little bit in the last couple of years, and we've kind of come up with a couple new things. We did some ice rods, kind of lake trout specific, which is kind of cool. I had quite a bit of input on that, so that's super cool. Kind of did a lot of field testing with it, and obviously, like, kind of ran through the ringers.
We've got a guest.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, no worries.
But yeah, like, got to put them through the ringers and stuff, so it was cool to do quite a bit of testing with that, and it was cool to, in the sense, like, you get to kind of create your own potion and test it out and see it function and see it succeed and tweak it as you need to and kind of get it out in other people's hands and see them having the same results. You know, it's cool to see a product get done like that, but it's been really cool working with them, and I'm kind of excited for what the future holds, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I've been to Selkirk once, fished the red there for a weekend. Yeah. And every time I go to Manitoba, it's some of the most insane fishing I've ever had. Like, just numbers wise, and like for mass, I really love the Master Angler program they have. We've got one that started up here in Sask as well. Yeah. And they're getting that going really well. But yeah, just, it's always so much fun. So it's kind of cool that started down Selkirk. It's pretty sweet place. Like, we don't have much for that in Saskatchewan. No. Like, the way it's on the river and stuff like that, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it's so cool. Like, and that's, like, I mean, that's a good thing you touched on there too, is like the Master Angler program. Like as a kid, like, down south there, like, I mean, you got a lot of different species down there, like in the southern part of the province, like the crappies, the bluegills, like brown trout, the stock trout, like all that kind of stuff. So the Master Angler program, like, man, that's a phenomenal program to, like, get youth into fishing, like, and keep them hooked. You know, it's like it becomes a challenge. It becomes like a kind of a bit of a personal vendetta per se. Like, you just want to get the badges and get that done. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's like Boy Scouts for adults. You know, it's like, you love it. Like, you go through there and do all the things and get all the species. And it's fun because it's like, it's really like a scavenger hunt for the anglers. Whereas it's like, okay, I got to go up here to get my split, and I got to focus on this. And then if we get them, we can go for the brook trout and finish that off and whatever else. You know, it's super cool. And it's a really great program in the sense that it shows people the success of the fisheries. You know, like, some places kind of fall under the radar because people just don't go there and they don't get the tourism they deserve, because there is great fishing there. It's just no one's showing it and no one's kind of doing it right. Mm-hmm. So it's cool to see that some places kind of pick up, and then they get a lot of attraction, a lot of tourism, and it brings a lot more money to the areas, right? Because people don't realize how much, like, fishing affects, like, communities and stuff. Like, there's a lot of communities in Manitoba that are close to small lakes, small reservoirs, where it's like, when those lakes are producing good fish, like, it's good fishing, like, those communities are just, like, booming off of it, because all the tourism, all the people coming in, getting gas, getting food, getting
hotels,
campgrounds, hotels, like, everything. You know, it's like, it brings a lot to the community, small engine repair, like, stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, and exactly.
It's great. Like, I think that the Master Angler program helps out a lot. And I think it's a really good thing, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And I think just the caliber of the fish that are there too. And like, when we did Selkirk, it was me and a buddy, and we had never, like, we researched obviously as one does before they go on a trip, but like, we had never seen it before, never ever been there. And it's like the first afternoon in 45 minutes, we had six master cats. It's like, that's just nutty how good it is there, obviously compared to it's other ridiculous places in the province. Right. So yeah, like you said, it does pump in a lot of stuff there too. Like, I just think of some of the other areas that we've gone as far as like for trout and stuff like that. It's like, I probably wouldn't have made the trip here, except now I know that there's mass angler size fish there.
Well, and the way you're, and that's like an awesome thing, right? It's literally like a real life scavenger hunt, in the sense, like, going to chase different fish, different places, and experience it all. It's awesome.
And the way they keep track of it all too, like, I think the ranking system's pretty cool, but then the fact that you can see all of your stuff there as far as the medals, and once you work up to a certain amount, then you get the next medal and stuff like that. I think that's, like,
it's a phenomenal program. And like, I've been really involved with it since a young age, like, going around, and like, that's what I'm so passionate for, that, like, the Master Angler thing specifically, is because, like, I spent so much of my childhood going around to getting dropped off at this trout pond, pick me up, like, at the end of the day, you know, and going for the bullheads, everything, like, all the junk fish per se, but still, like, it's part of the fun, you know?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Like, we had, cause we don't have a ton of that in Saskatchewan, as far as, like, we're definitely on the lower end of species, I would say, compared to Manitoba. And we have, like, Saskatoon and PA are on the river and stuff, but I have never seen so many people shore fishing in my life as when we launched at Selkirk and went up and down the river, and then a little bit farther north of that too. Like, the number of people that get out there is just incredible.
Yeah, it's awesome, man.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a good thing they got going there. I'm hoping, like, Saskatchewan started theirs. The Sask Wildlife Federation did, I think it was 2 years ago now, or a year, something like that. It hasn't been, it's kind of, I guess, compared to Manitoba, still in the newer stages, but they've been going with, like, they did the certificate thing as well. They got some nice certificates and whatnot, and I'm sure that'll get better and better, and they're a sponsor on the pod, and so that's definitely something that we've been enjoying as well. Like, I just need to catch more massive angler fish is my only problem, to be able to upload more to it. So
yeah. But, you know, it's great. And like I was saying earlier, it's like for the, even like for most people, it's like most people aren't catching, like, I mean, a lot of the clients, especially, like, most people are coming up here for fishing trip are coming up like once or twice a year, maybe. So it's like, it's not like they're catching a pile of masters anyway. So it's like, it's really special for them to like, actually like be accomplishing something, like if they can get a trophy, like they get a medal and this and that, you know. It's like, it's sentimental in a sense, like it's literally like winning an event in something, right? It's
like we said right back to the top of the episode, there's lots of newer people since COVID and stuff like that, and I'm sure they have family members that don't understand, like if they told them, yeah, I caught a 40 inch lake trout, they wouldn't really, they'd be like, okay, cool, and they see the picture, like, that's huge. But then when they can also add the fact that it's considered a master angler, and I got like this badge for it or whatever, this certificate, then that will resonate more with people who don't understand, right?
Well, exactly. Yeah. It's a great thing. But I mean, the other thing too, it's like, you got to keep in mind, like with the kind of programs like that is like, yeah, it's a size thing, but it's great. But I've also seen it kind of, I shouldn't say, well, I don't know how I'd word it, but I've seen it kind of damper the excitement of like catching like a 27 or a 40 inch pike, you know.
True. Yeah.
Sorry, 27 inch walleye or a 40 inch pike, right? Like, they're great fish, and sometimes I've seen some 40 inch pike, and I'm sure you have too, that are like way better, way nicer than like a lot of pike that get caught that are like 45, you know. It's like some pike are just so nice at that 40 inch mark, like they're just like gorgeous fish, like they're in their absolute prime, and it's like just such awesome fish. But yeah, it's not a trophy, but yeah, it's still an epic fish, and that should stick with you forever, you know. Like, that's an awesome moment.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's, you got a 45 that's just a railroad spike that's like not much to it, doesn't really look great, it's whatever, beat up. And then like I have one from a couple inches ago, it's 39.9 or something like that inches, and so it's like, you wouldn't say, oh, it's lots of people, it's not 40, but that fish was just beautiful, fat as can be, like you said, in its prime.
And it's gorgeous, right? It's just like when you see like a whitetail like in its absolute prime, it's just like that animal is just looking stunning right now, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And people just would look at a number and then think, oh, it's not this, exactly, right?
Right? Yeah, or you could catch like a 27 or 26 inch walleye that's like way heavier than like most 28, 29 inch walleye. Yeah. And like super fat and super colorful. And it's like, man, like that fish is like way nicer than like so many 30 inch walleye I've ever seen in my life. But yeah, it's not a trophy, but still it's like a gorgeous, gorgeous fish.
Yeah, exactly. No, totally true. On the same page with you there. And I think that kind of working into that master angler program kind of fits well with my next thing here. You were in a pretty good video series there with the Hunt Fish Manitoba group, right?
Yeah.
That was this winter. What's like, we've had Jay on, we've had Josh, been trying to get Keevan as well. He should be coming on. He's just always busy. And the same, Clayton's obviously a busy guy too. And so they'll come on eventually, but like, how hectic is that? Like, you've got all those personalities, you've got guys who just want to fish, and then they've also got to film. Like, how is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little chaotic, like, in a sense, for like kind of being in charge of that stuff, it's a little bit like kind of on my shoulders, in the sense that like I got my boss like looking at me like, man, you got to get good footage, obviously, which I mean, yeah, it's obviously like important, but there's also like a lot of camera stuff that has to be done properly, you know, too. It's like these guys come up, they have a plan. Any good filmmaker has a plan, like I wanted to get these shots of this and that and this. And obviously the big fish is the goal for a lot of things, but it doesn't necessarily always happen. So you always got to have stuff in case you don't get a big fish, in the sense that you got to have something able to be produced, even if you don't get a big fish. Cause if you count on a big fish all the time, it could not happen. Sometimes then you're cooped with a bunch of footage that's no good, no purpose. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you have purpose behind stuff, and that's something Clayton taught me about videos, is your stuff's got to have purpose. And I think like that's something that's really stuck with me. And like if forever will going forward, in the sense of whenever you create something, it's got to have purpose, even if it's not a big fish, there's got to be something behind it. But with like the whole thing, like with all those guys, it's fun. Like, I mean, it's a bit of chaos for sure. A lot of chirping, a lot of razzing each other.
Yeah.
I think we got in a couple little wrestling matches out on the ice there the one day. Yeah. So that was fun. Got some, yeah, got a lot of bloopers. That's for sure. A lot of bloopers. Yeah.
Lots of stuff that don't see the light of day.
Yeah. Jay's a pretty energetic, exciting guy. A little bit of a prankster, that's for sure. But yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was fun seeing all those guys. That was my first time like really meeting Jay and kind of getting to know him. So like that was really cool. And like obviously, like I know Kevin and Marcel pretty well. Like I consider them good friends. Done a lot of talking with them and stuff over the phone and stuff too. So I really value our relationship. But yeah, it was fun having all those guys out there, especially for that backcountry challenge thing. Like that was super fun. It's a really cool thing to do. Like if you haven't seen the video, like basically we go to the back lakes here. Like we have a chain of lakes of I think there's five lakes connected. And we go and try to catch all the species from walleye, perch, pike, lake trout, Cisco or a whitefish, and a burbot and a stock trout. So we try to knock off seven species. And I think the time that we beat it was like, or the time that we made it was like, I want to say it was like just under 6 hours or something like that. And like, not a lot of people come up and do it, honestly, but we did, like, we did a couple groups last year that did it. And the one group we did it and we were just an hour short. And that was just with like,
oh, really?
Yeah. That was just with like, I think it was like, like three anglers and myself. So like, it's not that bad, you know, like it's doable for sure. Like, I think we'll beat it this winter for sure.
Oh yeah. If you're that close, cause they were, how many guys was that group doing it with, like the Hunt Fish group?
Well that was with, Kevin didn't come out that day, but I don't know if Kevin or Marcel, Kevin did, Marcel didn't. So it was Kevin, Jay, Josh McFadden and Clayton. And myself, I guess. So that was just five of us.
Okay.
So it was also five of us when we went on the other thing too. But
okay.
Yeah, like I don't know. It's a really cool challenge. You know, it's one of those things that's like, it's just something super fun. You know, it's exciting because like you're all sitting around fishing so hard for like a trout that's only going to be like a foot long or a Cisco that's going to be like 10 inches. You know, it's like, it's funny.
Yeah.
But it's also like exciting. Like it's like, yeah, it's so funny. Like everyone's sitting around just stressing out over catching like a freaking big minnow, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But just trying to catch that Cisco.
It's so funny. Then you get that fish and like everyone's just so excited, ecstatic, like way more excited than they are if you get a big trout, you know? It's just hilarious.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's what is, would make it kind of more enjoyable. It's just, it adds that other aspect to just, rather than just fishing for big fish, right? It's kind of that, like everyone's, all of us are competitive.
Yeah.
And no right?
I think the big thing, like you said earlier, is like, for fishermen, the biggest thing is like the excitement of the unknown. And like, that's like a big thing of that challenge. It's like the unknown. You don't know what exactly species you're going to get. Yeah. You're targeting perch, but you might get a lake trout too. You might get a whitefish too. You know, it's like, there's a lot of different variables and it's just so fun and so exciting.
Yeah, exactly. I think I feel like that'd be something that, like, I'm sure you have people that have been coming up there for however many years, or they come up however many times a year. I'm sure that would be something that they'd be interested in, because you guys are pretty good about your board. Don't you have a board as well?
We do a master angler board in the winter. We're doing it too in the summer, but in the winter we push it a little bit harder for sure.
Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of another thing to just add to it, right? Is that competitive, like some guys are just, depending on where you go and like, I guess the cost that it is to go to some of these places from the stories I've heard, like some guys are, it's a big ego thing, money thing, right? And the competitive juices can get flowing a bit too much. But I feel like where you guys are, with the fact that you can drive there and everything like that, like you get some pretty good people there for that. Like it wouldn't become a bad thing. It'd be a lighthearted competition, right?
It's a fun thing to do. You know, it's a fun little challenge and there's nothing on the line. It's not like the winner of the year gets like 10 grand or nothing stupid. It's like, it's just bragging rights. It's just fun.
You know? Yeah, exactly. And you can say that every time you come up there, that I caught the biggest trout this year or whatever. And then you just walk around. Yeah. Be happy with that. No, that's good. And I guess as far as, we kind of touched it on it a bit. I don't know how much experience you have fishing outside of Manitoba. Have you done that much?
I haven't done a lot outside of Manitoba, like a little tiny bit in like Southern Sask and like a little tiny bit in Ontario, but yeah, not a lot, mainly in Manitoba. Like I haven't found the need to go anywhere else, honestly.
And that's, I think that's pretty fair. Like from what I tell everyone, like Saskatchewan obviously has nasty sized fish, and we have great fishing as well. But when I've gone to Manitoba for the fact that I'm just going there for a 3-day trip and the way the fishing's been, I'm like, this place, the potential in Manitoba is just nuts. So I guess from as far as what you see, like, because obviously you're on socials and stuff like that, like, what do you think kind of separates Manitoba from its neighbors maybe?
I don't know. I think what separates Manitoba from its neighbors is the sense that you have, obviously, like we kind of talked a little bit earlier, you have so many different species and you have so much. We have like rivers and lakes. Like, we don't have just rivers or just lakes, you know, like we got a lot of both. And Manitoba has so many freaking lakes in it, man. It's like, if you look at a map, there's like almost more water than there is freaking land, especially up here in the northern part of the province. It's like you get up on the float plane and fly. It's like, man, you're counting more lakes than you are nautical miles. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
That, like, there's just so much water, just abundance of it. And I know, like, obviously, like, Lake Winnipeg's a big attraction, but like up here, there's so many big walleyes too. And like, there's kind of like, obviously you have the green ones down there and then you have like the nice golden ones up here. But yeah, I think there's like the vast variety of it. Like, you have like so many different species and so many different fisheries, you know. It's just such a unique, there's so many different ecosystems, I should say. You know, it's not like, like in Saskatchewan, you hear so much about like Deef and Last Mountain and like some of those other like the bigger lakes, obviously, right? Yeah. And in Manitoba, you hear about Lake Winnipeg and like Clearwater and Athabasca and stuff a bit too. But like, there's so many lakes with so many trophies coming out of them. It's crazy. And I think the stock trout program in Manitoba was great too. I think that keeps a lot of stock trout fisheries really busy.
Yeah, I think that's a good point there at the stock trout. I haven't, I fished a bit for tigers and some of the other stocked lakes and stuff, and that program you guys have there is great for that. The tough thing with Sask is lots of those lakes, like, we have to, the way I find that things work geographically, you guys seem to have lots of that tree and whatnot come down more south, or at least where more of the people are, whereas we're having to drive quite a distance to get into those kind of areas.
Parkland stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, I'm in Moose Jaw here. I don't know how far I'd be from the border, like, call it 2 hours or something from the U.S. border. But then you basically are driving like past PA and then like another hour, which for me, PA is about 3 hours away. So call it 4 hours to get away from all that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like, so, Manitoba, it's like, I'd say no matter where you are, like within an hour and a half, like you probably have upwards of like 7-8 species of fish around you.
Yeah. I think that's pretty,
like, whether that's stock trout to walleye to pike, whatever, like different, like a different variety depending where you are, obviously. But I'm confident in saying that wherever you are in Manitoba, you're probably within an hour and a half, maybe even 2 hours of like 7 to 8 different species, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really cool thing. And as you were kind of talking about other provinces there, like, I kind of got thinking too. I think a big thing about Manitoba that kind of separates it from some of the other provinces is like the regulations, in the sense that you got to release the big fish and the slot limits and slot size and stuff like that. I think that the management of the fisheries is so crucial and so important, because, like, I mean, obviously, like, you know, like, a big pike doesn't get to 40 inches in a day. It doesn't grow big in 2 years. It doesn't grow big in 5 years. It takes time. It takes time for those fish to get big. And it's just like hunting. Like, you should be selecting what you're harvesting. It's opposite of hunting, because you're selecting the lower fish on the totem pole. You know, you're not selecting the top dogs because you want to keep those genetics in. People don't realize it, but it's like, you want to keep those big fish in the lake, even if they're not spawning properly, or like they're past their prime, whatever, like there's still a chance that fish is going to go through the spawning. And you're basically trying to keep those high class genetics in the lake. You know, it's the same as, it's the same as if you're, I don't know, like breeding, chickens or something like that, or however you do that. I don't know what you call it. There's probably a different name for it. Roosting chickens. I don't know, but whatever, like if you're trying to select the chickens that are producing the most, right? So like you want to select, like you want to focus on aging out the chickens that aren't laying eggs every day or every other day. You want to focus on the chickens that are laying 2 eggs a day or at least an egg a day. You know, like you're trying to get the ones with the higher genetics to focus on keeping that in the lake, right? Like you want everything to be at its absolute prime. And if you are harvesting fish, harvest the ones that are kind of at the bottom of the totem pole, you know, not saying harvest sick fish, but just harvest younger fish where there's like so many more of them.
Yeah, exactly. Because you can't really look at a fish that's in a younger age and be like, oh, this one has the genetics to be whatever, right?
But so the thing is, like those fish that are like 15 inches long, there's going to be a million more of them than there will be fish that are 40 inches long, you know?
Yeah.
Like I shouldn't say 40 inches long because I'm kind of referring to walleye, but say 30 inches long, you know, like there's going to be so much more of those 15 inch fish than 30 inch fish, obviously. So it's, and like the reason I think about that is because like I think the regulations in Alberta are kind of a little cattywampus in the sense that they're kind of backward like that. Like you're harvesting bigger fish, which makes no sense to me because it's like, man, you want those Gen X in the lake, you know? It's like they breed bulls for a reason, you know? They breed and focus on selecting bulls for a reason. It's the same with fish. You're trying to breed the higher class fish to focus on the higher class fish.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one thing I didn't really realize on episode 32, we had Dr. Chris Summers on, who's out of the University of Regina here for our, for the fisheries program. And they have a really good, really awesome tagging program. You can email him if you catch a tagged fish, he'll let you know everything about it and whatnot. But we had him on it, and talking to him, I kind of thought that fish, like I had no reason to think it. I kind of thought fish were like humans, they get past their prime and nothing's happening. And he actually said that they found that fish get even better with age. Like you said, they might maybe miss out on a spawn or something like that because it just takes so much energy and they're older. Yeah. But as far as their eggs and like everything like that, you said passing on those genetics, those are obviously important fish. So that just reiterates the fact that you want to try and keep those big ones in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same as breeding any animals. Yeah, we're not forcing them to breed, but we're trying to hone in on that higher class, right?
Yeah, it's all about increasing the odds that that's going to happen. And if the fish is on your plate, it can't really do that.
Exactly. That's the biggest thing, right?
Yeah.
Like I hear people harvesting big walleye and big pike, and man, it just makes me sick. It's like, why would you even do that?
Yeah.
It's like, first of all, it's like, yeah, you're taking that out of the ecosystem. And another thing is, it's like, man, think of all the toxins and stuff built up in that fish from being like 20 years old. Like it's no good for you, man. It's gross.
Yeah. Like I wish it was more publicized or more information on it as to how old some of these fish are. Like talking to some people that know a thing or two about it. It's incredible how old, like some of these lake trout, they're older than most of the people that are catching them lots of the time. Well, like it's
like I was watching a video the other day about some lake trout on Superior by like Superior Angling, I think is the channel. He makes some really good videos, but it was like talking about a 40 inch fish, and like whatever they age it. And it was like 37. And I mean, yeah, some fish are definitely 37, but some fish are definitely way older in the sense that like you can, like some fish you just catch and like you look at them and like, I've seen it so many times, like where you get a 40 inch trout, 43 inch trout. And you're like, man, this fish looks like it's so old. This fish looks like it's like 60 years old, you know, but it's like also you catch a 40 inch trout. And you're like, man, this fish looks like it was like born like 2 years ago. It literally just looks like a small one that's just like, just exploded into this giant fish, but it's literally like the exact same, like no scars, super pristine looking. But like in a picture, if you're like not holding it properly, it'll look like it's like 25 inches.
Oh, you can just ruin a fish easy.
So young, you know, but it's like, it's crazy in the sense that like I think fish age so different, and it's like, there's just so much variables to it, I think, you know?
Yeah. Well, you can also have, depending on even a subs, like there's different, you've got different subspecies, I think you'd call it, of lake trout, right? And like maybe like a redfin actually is like 60, 70 years old, but it's only like 30 inches.
You get some small ones sometimes, and you're like, man, like this thing looks way older than any like 40 inch trout I've seen in my life. You know, it's like this thing looks like it's been battered and beaten around for its whole life. And then you catch the big fish and it's like, man, this thing looks way younger than that little one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's weird, you know, some fish just don't get big. That's just part of it, just like the genetics we're talking about.
Well, and that's what I tell clients when we had some that really wanted a 50-inch pike this year, and I'm like, well, here's the numbers. And I'm like, whatever the numbers are for how many 40s we catch in a week or a set of clients, it's like you also have to keep in mind that not every pike will get to 50 inches if it lived unlimited time, right? Like that's just genetics. They're not all going to get there. Just like I would say, it's pretty good odds that they're going to make it to that 39-40, obviously, for the most part, if they live long enough. But I feel like once you start getting that 45 plus, that's some special genetics, right? That's not a guarantee.
Yeah. So, and it's the same as like black bears or deer or something like that. You know, like they don't all get to be like a Boone and Crockett. They're not all Boone and Crockett genetics, but they like, you don't know them unless you let them grow, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a good point. Probably, I guess we had two segments here, so we're probably around an hour now. So I think what we like to do at the end is some rapid fire questions that I didn't send you as far as what we were going to talk about. So you don't know what these ones are going to be.
Going in blind.
Yeah, going in blind. So I guess just whatever comes top of your mind when I ask the question, go for it. But I guess as far as number one here, your go-to lake trout lure, which I can kind of guess based off our conversation, but...
I'd say my go-to lake trout lure is like definitely like the tube jigs are just a classic. But like I said, like I like I'm a firm believer in big fish eating small baits. I'm really confident in big fish eating smaller baits. So I'd say like my number one confidence bait is like a 4-inch tube. The six inch, like the 6-inch ones work well, but the 4-inch ones just catch way more fish. And honestly, like even in the middle of summer, like I'll use a lot of like 2-inch tubes. Like 2-inch tubes are just a killer for lake trout. Like they're small, but man, they kill lake trout. But yeah, like I'm super confident in a 4-inch bait. It's just like, it's a good bait because you can work it quick. And you can still like finesse enough, you know?
Right. Yeah, for sure. So I was figuring it was going to be the tube jig, but that's more specific there with that 4-inch. So that's good. It's kind of takes less to entice them that way too, right? Like they probably have to think about it less.
And the biggest thing too is like for guiding is it's more forgiving in the sense that it's like your clients aren't necessarily always working their baits exactly how you tell them or exactly how they should. So it like the smaller baits are more forgiving in the sense that it's like fish are going to see it and just hit it as opposed to see it and have to examine it a bit more and then hit it, you know, sometimes right. with a bigger bait, they want to kind of look at it a little bit more.
Right. For sure. Sounds good. So second one here, I don't even have this one written down. I just came up with it. It's kind of a point of contention. Actually, I just came up with the second one. We'll go to the first one. Is it walleye or pickerel?
It's walleye for sure. Number one walleye.
Okay. Sounds good. And number two here, this one's also could be a point of contention. I've kind of flip-flopped on it, but is music a yes or a no in the boat?
Music's definitely a yes in the boat. Definitely cuts the awkward silence, especially for the, like the midday lulls and stuff like that. It's nice to cut the silence. Definitely crank it on the boat rides for sure. I don't ever crank it like when I'm fishing usually, but like I'll definitely crank it for the boat ride for sure.
Okay. There we go. And then kind of just talking about clients there. As far as a go-to boat snack as a guide, whether they're bringing you a snack, so if someone lines you up and has you as a guide, if they're bringing you a snack or you're taking your own snack out.
Like, oh man, that's kind of tough, dude. Like I'm a big sweet tooth guy. So honestly, like something sweet's always great. Jerky's another thing that's just a killer. Doesn't really matter if it's good or bad. Like, I mean, jerky can't even be that bad, honestly. Like, I'm still going to enjoy it.
Jerky's jerky.
Something to just gnaw on for the day, you know? Get a little bit of meat bubble gum going on there, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put that there.
I love jerky. And something, it's one of those things that's just like I never, ever buy. It's just one of those things I always forget to buy. But like I'm always so grateful whenever people bring it up, especially like their homemade like deer, moose jerky, whatever. Like I love jerky. Yeah. And in the winter, you get a lot of that stuff, so I love it.
Yeah, well, it's probably because if you're buying it at the store, it's like $20 for like three pieces.
Exactly. I'm just waiting for someone to come up with a moose they shot and just have a bunch of it.
Yeah, exactly. And winter's awesome for that. Like, I know I take out all my deer sausages, jerky. That's just to
cut their body heaters cranked up with the foil and everything.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a good point there. And then I guess for the last one here, this is more of a guide question, but kind of the best lodge activity as a guide other than fishing.
Like what I enjoy most about being at the lodge, you'd say?
Yeah, other than the fishing aspect of it.
Well, I think like the good thing to I guess a good way to say it would be, obviously like when you're at the lodge, like here, it's not a fly in. So it's a little bit different in the sense that you're not you're not landlocked. Mm-hmm. So you can obviously get away and stuff if you want. But I'd say like the biggest thing here is just like, I mean, building relationships with the other guides and like you got to think with the outfitting thing. Yeah. Some people might butt heads a bit, but at the end of the day, it's like, you guys got to work together and it's got to be a team effort, you know, you got to be on the same page. Like I try to make sure all the guides, especially like all the new guides, like we're hiring stuff. It's like, I try to make sure everyone's on the same page of like keeping your clients humble and like everything like that. Like you don't want any loudmouths. You don't want anyone starting stuff. You don't want any drama. It's like, just cut that stuff out, keep it all good. And like, I mean, honestly, like you become a family. It's just a super tight knit family. Like everyone you work with just becomes family because you spend so much time with them, right? It's like, it's your home away from home. and you'll leave and you'll find yourself missing it. You miss being with the guys or the girls, whoever. You miss being with the crew, you know? Yeah. And I think that's a, like, I value every morning we go down there and we have breakfast together. And like, I really value that time because we all sit there and like all the, like the core crew, you know, like we all sit there and enjoy our time together and chat a little bit, like a little bit of bullshit and stuff like that for sure. But you know, like I love it. I love spending time with the people and kind of figuring out what everyone's going to do through the day and talk through some of the issues that are going to come up in the next couple of days, like some bookings ahead of time, stuff like that. I really value like the time that we get to spend talking to each other and stuff.
Yeah, I'd say I'd have to agree with that one as well. It's kind of, you don't realize if you've never done it before or you've never been somewhere where you're going into a place where you don't know anyone, right? Lots of the time growing up, you're always somewhere where you know someone or kind of know someone, right? Whereas when you head up to these lodges, you don't really know anyone. And so it's kind of totally different. But then those bonds you can make, and it's a lot of like-minded people, right? They're not up there because they don't want to be. Everyone wants to be up there for the most part, right? So I think that plays into it too.
Yeah, I love that. Like I love the like relationships we build with the guides. And like, I mean, there's been a couple guides like I've built like really, really good relationships with, and some of them have moved on to other journeys too. And like, man, like to this day, I still miss a lot of them, you know, like they're just great humans. Yeah. And like, you share the passion for it. And like, I mean, it's just like what we're doing now. Like, we're like, you just get into the talks of like the lake trout and the pike and stuff. And you just get like, your mind gets going about just how passionate you feel about it and how passionate you are to like learn more about it and stuff. And like, I just love having those like late night conversations with other guides, like talking about like the stuff we want to learn and figure out more and advance more about the lake and the lake trout specifically and stuff like that. You know, like I find that so cool. That's so cool to have like minds that are just focused on it. You know, like I have so much respect for like fishermen that just like are wanting to learn and doing it, you know. Like, I'm sure you get a lot of people messaging you too, like asking about spots and like just like how to fish for certain things. That's like I'll tell people stuff for sure, but it's like, man, like if I see people out doing it, like I have way more respect for you than shooting a message saying like, how do you fish for sturgeon on the Cinnabon or how do you fish for walleye on like the prairie, stuff like that. It's like, man, go out and try it. Like, they're not huge bodies of water. So it's like, get out and try it. And like, it's just so much more rewarding, like doing it yourself. Right.
Oh shooting yeah, stuff. Exactly.
Like it's nice to have intel. Intel's great, but it's like an example would be as, I went down to the pod the other day to target goldeye because like just like for the master angler program, right? Trying to knock off a few more goldeye. And a buddy of mine gave me a spot down there on one of the rivers that goes through the pod there. And I went down there and I caught some big goldeye and stuff, but like I left there and I was like, man, it was awesome. Like I caught in the masters and stuff, but it just doesn't feel the same as like going and like walking the river and figuring stuff out yourself. You know, it's just not the same.
Yeah. Like oh, for sure.
It's nice, but it's not the same. Like you don't feel as accomplished in the sense of that, right?
Yeah. Like that's totally how I am too. Like I who knows what it is. Maybe it's an ADHD thing. I don't know. I can't like I respect the guys who just target walleye and they're amazing walleye fishermen, but like for me I need to switch it up all the time. So it's more fun for me to like before I started guiding and missing the family trip we do to Northern Saskatchewan, I was exploring new lakes and basically like the first two times I went there, like first time, nothing. Second time we got a bite and it's like, oh, we got a, like, we were only there for a couple hours. It's like, oh, we actually got a bite this time. And then the next time it's like, oh, we started hammering fish. And that feeling, even though there was nothing like huge, that feeling of figuring like it out a bit more is
figuring it out. It's like seeing your work pay out, you know. It's like, you just got to spend the time thinking about it and like rehearsing what you're going to do in your head and like how you're going to approach things. And like that's just like I'm so honorable towards people that like that do that and like are actually focused on it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Cause it takes a lot of dedication. It's insane. Yeah. And like even people that like, again, that don't know fishing as much, I'm sure you get the messages from family, friends or whatever. Like I get them too. It's like basically like, oh, you're out there all the time. Like you fish in an insane amount. And I'm like, the crazy part is there's people that are doing this way more than me. And it's just nuts. And I'm out as much as I can be. And there's still people who that just it's their whole life. And it's hard to do that, but it's pretty incredible as well that people can pull that off.
Yeah. It's just the passion. You know, it just consumes you. It's literally like you eat, sleep, breathe fish. That's all.
Yeah, when you're up at the lodge, that's kind of lots of time. That's all there is to do as well. So it works out pretty well. Yeah. Like instead of taking the boat out of the water, driving home and you drop your buddy off and that's the end of the day. Well, now it's you tie up at the dock and we don't really have much else to do other than talk fishing and figure out kind of new spots, stuff like that, right? So the conversation just is never ending. So no, that's definitely a fun part. But like, even with this, it's already, this second part's already been 50 minutes and it doesn't feel like it has been, but
no, it's like 10 minutes, you know, it's just like conversation rolls when you get talking about it and you get like the passion comes out, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But I guess we may as well, I'm sure you've had a long day already and it's 9:30 there now, but
June's looking, dude.
Yeah, you got the good tan lines going there.
Yeah, typical.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, that's mine have kind of filled in.
Check out that flop pants.
Got the flip flops going all day in there, hey?
Oh yeah, buddy. All day, every day.
Yeah. No, that's just like a sign of how much you're on the water. It's a rite of passage.
Yeah, I went through I got my girlfriend to go through the days for my accountant there. And I was out 179 days last year throughout the summer and winter.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's actually nuts.
I'm sure this summer's, but this year is going to be way more. I'm sure of it. It's right. In February, in this part of the winter, there was a point there where I did 65 days straight, just every day guiding in the winter. And then you're looking at doing basically the same thing in the summer. So it adds up pretty quick.
Yeah. And I actually thinking about now have more questions and stuff about the winter. So I'll definitely have to have you on again here. But I guess to kind of wrap it up, plug yourself, where can everyone find you? And for Baker's Narrow stuff as well, what's everyone looking for on socials and stuff there?
For sure. Baker's Narrows Lodge is just Baker's Narrows Lodge on Facebook and Instagram. Myself, Mac Mulligan on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube too. I'm working on the YouTube game. So check that out. It's a work in progress, but working on kind of upload every 2 weeks kind of deal, keeping it as much as I can while doing the guiding thing. But it's good. Yeah. I've been enjoying it and appreciate the love and support on there so far.
Yeah, I've watched a couple of those videos there. The one I was checking out, I saw you sharing on Facebook too, was the pike spawning and some pretty cool stuff that you run into, right?
It's kind of neat, you know. It's kind of something you can do while the season's closed, something you can go and enjoy.
Exactly, yeah. No, that's good stuff. Well, we appreciate you coming on. Sure. Like I said, we'll definitely have you on again here because there's a lot more we can talk about. But thanks for taking the time tonight and coming on.
No problem, man. Appreciate it.
There you have it. Another episode in the books, episode 57. We hope you guys enjoyed that one with Mac. I know I had an awesome time sitting down with him, and we thank him again for coming on for an episode. He was actually told me after we were done recording, I was like, so what time's your guy's day typically start at? We're always where I'm guiding up at Lac Le Mard. It's 8, leaving the dock at 8, get back at 5 to 5:30. And he's like, oh, we're going out at 4 tomorrow. And I'm like, it's 10 o'clock there. He's like, yeah. But then, so basically he'll go out from 4 till it was 2 in the afternoon or something. So it's still the same amount of time, I guess. But he said, because he was basically explaining that he's like, at least in the winter and stuff, you can get out for sunrise, right? Whereas sunrise is so much earlier in the summer. He's like, you're fishing a lot less of that window. So he's like, we've been finding that the trout bite's been better early in the morning. So we're going to go out at 4. So he would have been a tired boy the next day, I'm guessing. But so thank you x2 for that. But we hope you guys enjoyed that one. Like I said, I know I did. Brandon's probably, now that he's listened to it, probably wishing he was there too, because Mac was a good guy to talk to and full of energy and full of information. So thank you again. Absolutely. But
it's cool having these younger guys on too, right? I mean, we talk to a lot of people, a lot of guides. Normally, you know, other than yourself or fecal guide there. A lot of times they're a little bit older and they're seasoned. And I mean, Mac is seasoned. He just happens to had started his career really young. Yeah. And I think it's just a cool take and really nice to have somebody that's, you know, from a neighboring province in Manitoba at a lake and a lodge that is, like you mentioned in the intro, drivable. You know, it's accessible for people to get to. It's something that a lot of us in Saskatchewan can take advantage of. And yeah, I mean, just a great interview all in all. We do have to give a quick shout out to our sponsors again, 13 Fishing, Sask Wildlife, and Lucky Bastard Distillers. Without them, we wouldn't be able to have this show for 3 years and running. Thank you guys for tuning in. We truly appreciate it. And we hope that you tune in to the next one.
Welcome to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast, presented by 13 Fishing Canada. Make your own luck. We're here to scratch that angling itch and talk everything fishing. Join us as we sit down with special guests from across the industry. Now, here's your hosts, Brandon Cater and Logan Lewis. Thanks for tuning in to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your favorite listening platform so we can reach more anglers just like you. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for media updates and behind-the-scenes content.